on 1116 SEN, The Right Time with Gavin Krasisca, Nick Hall and Mark Fine.
Oh, Gavin Krasisca away doing good things, as we said last week, will be off for a couple of weeks, which means that the responsibility always is taken up by Mick Hall, Dayhab Rehab Centre's principal, but also his able deputy, Jack Nagel. First of all, let's welcome Mick Hall back to 1116 SEN. You're looking fighting fit, Mickey?
G'day, Finey. I'm feeling fighting fit too, but I tell you what, I do miss the old Gav.
Well, you're in the Gav seat.
I know. It's amazing. It's actually a pretty good seat. I don't know if I want to give it up when he gets back. We might have to sort that one out.
You boys can duke it out. Well, sort of lose one, gain one, because having Jack Nagel come in is always great. Jack's actually very comfortable behind the mic, so radio-wise, he's a good performer. But also, the perspective of a younger person is important because we have a changing face in our community with different substances being the focus of a lot of time spent by Dayhab and even the community. And to put not too fine a word on it, ICE has made, it's been a game changer in addiction and addiction treatment, hasn't it, Jack?
100%, you're right. And I'm really looking forward to tonight's show with our special guest and the topics relating to the ICE addiction and youth and things like that. So it should be good. Thanks.
And whilst we should not ever suggest that addiction is age-specific, gender-specific, or demographic, suburbs, etc., there is certainly a real concern for parents of all children. Mm. I, as a parent of an 18-year-old, that there's a scourge out there that seems to have... And we need to be careful because, of course, newspapers are reporting it quite differently, whether there's an epidemic, an ICE epidemic, etc. But as two people who work in the industry, I don't need to read the paper. Mick, you've been talking about the changing face of your clientele and how ICE has unfortunately been very good for business.
Well, it has been, and I can tell you that 80% of our clientele now that come through are directly addicted to ICE. And I'll tell you something else as well. I read this ridiculous report through VADA about, it must have been a few weeks ago, and the great minds of the government or of somebody have put together a study and they've said, ICE is not an epidemic and not a pandemic and we need to just settle down. Well, idiots. Idiots. Because that is just rubbish compared to us people and professionals that are working on the front line of addiction and are tackling this day in and day out and have done so. Myself, personally, have done this for 15 years now. And I'm telling you that there is, and it is, and there is a massive problem out there. And, you know, it never ceases to amaze me, bureaucracy, sometimes. I'm getting on my high horse now, finally. I'm starting to get a little bit agitated, a little bit animated. Jack, help me, mate.
Yeah, well, look, I read that same report and, you know, typically thought the same thing. And, I guess the way it's really changing is the effect that it has on people. And I think drugs in general at the moment and all addictions, it's moving away from, you know, the plant-style drugs and moving more towards chemicals that you can just pull out from underneath the sink and all sorts of things, which is, you know, not only scary for the effects that it has, but the physical health of people and, you know, what it's doing to them mentally.
And this chemical stuff as well. I mean, I also read recently that, there's been some discoveries made that... that heroin can now be made through some pretty common chemicals and can be easily cooked and made...
A synthetic version of it.
Which is... I guess it's easy to come by anyway through doctors, through you know, how Endone and the other opiates are kind of handed out like Smarties these days. But, yeah, but there's a real black market thing now the punters out there are learning how to cook this stuff and to cook it pretty easily too.
And of course, we always talk about addiction and the fact that it is a road, that it has a start and it's not something that overnight can take your life, but it can, because of course, it can. We always need to factor in the knowledge that, in certainly with narcotics, there are substances, even of course heroin, as derived from the plant. The plant derivative is famously a killer of people when overdosed. But also, we always have to remember that whilst many chemical formulas are put together to create drugs, they're not put together by reputable pharmacists or chemists.
Well, that's right.
They're put together by desperados who couldn't care less whether you drop dead or not.
Well, that's right. And that's one of the biggest risk factors, isn't it? I mean, using anything, whether it be ice, speed, coke, heroin, any of these drugs, you know, they can be...
Ecstasy.
That's right. I mean, we can't tell, number one, the potency, so we don't... It's too hard to tell. If you're an addict out there using, you're not going to send it off for testing, you know, like you get it and you're around the corner and bang, it's in your arm, it's up your nose, or it's, you know, wherever. And it's in, and you just don't know what's going in there, you know?
Well, it's really quite scary. One of the ones that jumps to my mind, particularly with ecstasy and amphetamines, is that at different points, cooks were putting very, very faint slices of glass in the drugs so that when you put it into your system, it cuts through your veins and gets into your bloodstream faster, you know? So when I got clean and looked back on those different, or found out what people were putting in drugs, you know, at the time when I was using them, it didn't scare me, but afterwards when I actually got clean, I thought, oh my God, what have I been putting in my system?
And we've always drawn the distinction on this program between usage and addiction, because the program is about addiction.
Yep.
And we understand that, may it be alcohol, people drink, no problems for many people. For most people, people gamble, no problems. People take drugs, no problems, and have it as part of their life, though it is illegal, and we certainly don't suggest or recommend it simply on the basis of its legality, but also on the notion that it can be, if you are unlucky, a fatal choice. And for addicts out there, they are fully cognizant of the fact that those odds multiply, because the more you take it, the more risks you are taking.
Absolutely.
A simple numbers game. It's a good time to introduce our special guest tonight, and Jack, I'll give you the honour of introducing to the listeners who's in the studio.
Okay, so look, we're very lucky tonight. Me and Mick thought today, actually, that, you know, we've got too many males on the show typically, and we needed a bit of female presence. So we're really lucky we've got Hayley in here tonight. And look, it's just been a pleasure to watch Hayley go through her recovery journey over the last 2 years and really change. And, you know, I'll let her talk a little bit about herself. But, yeah, welcome, Hayley. It's good to have you.
Thanks, guys.
G'day, Hayley.
My story, it's much the same as everyone else's, really. I was a bit of a late bloomer with my using, though. I didn't start using till I was 19, compared to some that is pretty late. And then I continued using for about 3 years. I started pretty, just the normal sort of stuff, so going out, drinking, maybe popping some pills, all that sort of fun stuff. But for me, it progressively got pretty worse after I started taking ice. At first, I did the wrong thing with it and I snorted it, which wasn't ideal. And then I started hanging out with a different crowd who they were actually smoking it. And as soon as I started smoking it, I can actually pinpoint the time that my life went downhill, and it was when I started smoking it. Because from then, I lost my job pretty quickly. I started hanging out with a completely different crowd, stopped hanging out with my friends that actually wanted, you know, the best for me, and started hanging out with these people that just sort of, you know, wanted my money or my car or, you know, a place to crash, really. And then from then on, you know, just, yeah, my family stopped talking to me. I wasn't welcome home anymore. I was living in my car, which wasn't good because I didn't have a license to drive it anyway. And then from there, I just got arrested a few times for drug possession, driving unlicensed. And as my court cases kept coming up, I kept missing them because I was, you know, under the influence and didn't want to go. And then it came to this one time where I got arrested with my friend, and I just had, too many warrants out for my arrest, got arrested, was held in the cells for 3 days, which was not fun. And then I was held at the women's prison for 4 days. And then after that, I got out on some pretty strict bail conditions, which my mother made sure that I abided by, which was really hard for me because I wasn't used to, you know, living by her rules. It'd been a long time since I had. And then, yeah, there was this one day where I got given a pretty hefty ultimatum. It was either go to jail or go to rehab, and I didn't want to go to jail, clearly. And my mum, she was just calling the cops to actually take me away, and it just so happened that one of the managers at Dayhab was returning her phone call. And, yeah, and she answered the phone, and she was like, "No, you're too late. I'm sending her away. That's that." And he was like, "Oh, quick, put her on the phone." Put me on the phone, and I've never looked back ever since, really.
I remember that. I remember that call. I hope you don't mind me mentioning, Hayley, but I remember speaking to Hayley's mum, and I can hear somebody screaming like a banshee in the background, and it's Hayley going psychotic in the background, and I remember a very, very, very distressed mother, and we were able to kind of talk to you, and it's amazing. See, this is the connection finding, like when one addict speaks to another, there's an amazing connection that can happen, and it can happen really quickly. So I remember talking to Hales on the phone, right, and I reckon within about 3 minutes, right, she'd settled down, she was speaking to me civilly, right, and we kind of made that little connection from there. And it literally took, maybe 3 minutes was even too long, or maybe it was even less than that, but that connection happened really quickly, and there's a real, there's something in that.
We need to take a break. When we come back, there's so many places to go and explore here. Hayley now is just a healthy, happy-looking... I don't know how old you are. We'll work it out by the story, probably, but just a happy, healthy-looking young person. And we'll find out exactly how she got to where she did, a place that obviously was very close to incarceration. And then really I think we need to expand upon and focus in on the notion that making a decision has changed a person's life immeasurably. It seems to be more doable, I think, than people give it credit for. It can be done. Hayley's an example of it. But there you go. Sliding doors, or in Hayley's case, phone answered, phone not answered. And what a different life we have now. Welcome back to The Right Time. Mick Hall, Dayhab Rehab Centre, Glen Waverley.
Perfect.
Oh, mate, there's no problems now. I'm learning systems, because I always used to mix up Brad Scott and Chris Scott.
Yes.
And then I worked out Chris Scott Katz.
Uh-huh.
Mount Waverley. Mick, no, I have to think the other way.
Okay. I don't know how that works, but it's working.
Because you are the opposite to every notion of where you should be. You're the Mr. Inside Out, Mick, so it's easier. Logic says Mick Mount Waverley. Logic, Mick Hall, no good. Jack Nagel, also from Dayhab Rehab Centre. And Hayley, who we met just before the break, who is one of their great success stories, one of many great success stories. So, Hayley, I want to pick up the story around the time you picked up the phone. You are in self-preservation mode because you don't want to go to jail. But had you considered before then the notion that you were going to have to at some point address the person you'd become and your addiction?
At that moment in my life, I didn't think that I had to address it. It was more so my mum that was bringing it to the forefront, because, you know, because everyone I knew was going to jail and stuff like that. So I was sort of just like, oh, okay, this just must be the next step in my life.
Did you view yourself as having a drug problem?
Yes, I did view myself as having a drug problem, but I didn't think I was one of the bad ones. I thought I was a well-behaved one that just kept getting caught.
Unlucky.
Yeah.
A good girl having a bad run.
Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Mick, at that point, you're on the other end of the phone.
Yep.
And I'm sure you've dealt with potential patients that are going to come across your, you know, come into your sphere for the wrong, not for the wrong reasons, because ultimatum time, prison.
Yep.
Cut off of funds.
Yep.
Doing it to shut up mum. Doing it for external forces. So
yes.
How do you handle that phone call when really you need the person on the other end of the line to really embrace the notion of getting better?
Yeah, that's a good question, Finny. Well, it's not easy, you know, but I guess we would go use the tact of, or the philosophy that there is no wrong reasons to come to rehab. I don't actually care why someone gets to rehab, right? I couldn't care less. Whether it's court pressure, whether it's, you know, somebody, whether somebody's been railroaded into it, I don't care. What I care about is what treatment they're going to receive and the quality of the treatment that they're going to receive. All right, so for me, there's two kind of components to this. The first component is getting the person in through the bloody door, which is, you know, however that happens. So if someone rings and they go, listen, I've got such and such on my back and they won't get off me back and I've got to do this, I go, oh yeah, great, okay, well, let's get them off your back. Let's get in here and get started. That's okay. I'm all right with that reason. But then once we start, then we start to work at, you know, breaking down the denial. You know, our job, all right, so our initial job is to get a person in through the door of rehab. The second part of the job is to create and develop a deep and profound shift in thinking and emotion within that person. That's our role. That's what we do. People don't have that before they come to rehab. They get it during rehab.
All right, that is a big call, and it doesn't just have to be in the world of addiction. To get a person, an adult, who's already out of the influence of parents, so an independent adult,
yep,
to have a paradigm shift, to really change their outlook on life,
yep,
and how they're living, whether it's somebody in a treatment facility or whether it's a spiritual leader or a mentor,
yep,
is a momentous moment in that person's life. It is, you are re-grooving that person's way of being.
That's correct. And it's come because that person's in so much turmoil. Now, I can tell you, no matter what denial a person's in or however they've been railroaded, nobody gets up one day and goes, oh, what a day. You know what? I'm bored. I'm going to go to rehab. Or I'm going to ring a rehab because I've got nothing else to do. People are ringing rehab because shit's gone wrong.
Yep.
Right? And mum and dad are railroading Johnny, or the court is demanding that such and such comes and presents at such and such rehabilitation centre because crap has gone wrong. Really wrong, even if that person doesn't want to admit it. So our job is to still get them in, but then we need to reveal to them the actual crap that they're in, because then that produces the right atmosphere for that person to want to get out of it.
Right.
Then we can help them.
Yeah, you're not dragging people from a happy place. That's
no.
So Hayley, this bloke's on the other end of the phone. Your mum's screaming in the background. The clock is ticking for your incarceration. Through all of that, was there a part of you that wanted just to sort of hang up the phone and go back to your mates and just start doing drugs again, taking ice again? Were you thinking along the lines of, right, all right, I'll just do this phone call, get my mother to shut up, get another court, whatever delays, whatever, and we'll get back to core business, which is my addiction. Was that going through your head?
About 99% of my thoughts were, yes, we'll just get through this phone call, I'll go to dayhab, and then, you know, I'll actually sneak off and I'll go do drugs with my friends. But it wasn't until at the end of the phone call where I was having a massive bitch about my mum, and then Mick on the other line was like, oh, actually, do you realise this is your doing, not hers? And it kind of threw me because no one had really spoken to me like that other than my mother, and I wasn't listening to her at that moment in time. So it really threw me. And then that 99% chance of going off to use drugs kind of dropped to about, it was like 80%, and I was curious because no one had spoken to me like that. And, you know, it really resonated with me because I understood what he meant.
Yeah, great. Yeah. And Jack, this is where you step in, because the mum-daughter dynamic and the sort of age group is something that you know particularly well, and obviously this fella cut to the quick, the professor of having graduated from the University of I'd Done It and I Know Exactly What's Going On Here, but even more specifically, being of the age, that would really ring a bell and resonate with you as well too, wouldn't it? Not only your own experience, but the people you now deal with.
Mm, that's 100%. And I find it really interesting. I think half my battle is, and half any counsellor's battle is, or anyone that's trying to help anyone, is to just connect with them. Not so much deliver the spiritual message that's going to change someone's life instantaneously. It's really just making them feel a part of, hearing what they're saying, and bringing their self-worth up, and bringing them, you know, into being a part of something. And that's really what starts to create that atmosphere where someone can then go, wow, this person's actually taking a genuine interest in me, and, you know, they're making sense, and they've been where I've been, and I want to change now.
Good point, Jackie boy. And also, I think one of the great things, you know, with Jack's kind of age group and that sort of thing is that quite often when families... you know, families make phone calls to us. You know, families are listening to this tonight, right? People know people that are suffering and they don't know what to do. And they might be, you know, the people that are suffering might be young people, and they hear someone like Jack, or they see someone like Jack or like Haley. And it's an example of, like, here's some young people, and we're talking in the early 20s, right, that suffered, you know, huge addictions and have turned their life around. Amazingly, you know, that is such an important, you know, message and a message of hope.
It is very important because, and no names, no Petra, we were actually discussing a particular case during the break, but in that case, parents, I believe, had, and I know this is a common dynamic, they are so waiting for a phone call, waiting for that terrible phone call that their child has passed away, that they get into a mental state of not expecting it and then having almost coped with it. They've almost written their child off, that at some point they're going to get the bad news. And they don't even think about what Jack and Haley have done because they're so conditioned to waiting for that call.
Well, that's, you're spot on. I mean, the prime example of that is my mother and father. My mother, and this is true, she actually kind of almost prayed that I'd just pass away because I was in so much pain and so much turmoil, and I caused so much, you know, they were just so worried about me for a long, long time.
And they probably lived that moment of that phone call a million times,
you know.
So it's time, you know. So it's almost happened already.
Well, you know, my parents run a group now called Families Anonymous, right? And it's specifically designed for it's free. It's for family members, all right, of people that are addicts, right? And you know, Jack's story, Haley's story, and my story, right? I can feed this back to us and to the listeners tonight, have become a massive beacon of hope for despairing families that go to that group and are in so much turmoil and so worried, and they have all said, your son, that young guy, Jack, and they've seen young Haley. She's been on the news a fair bit, and she's always does little interviews for us and stuff like that. She's been fantastic. Just such beacons of hope. That's, you know, right. And there is support out there for families too, by the way. Families Anonymous, Al-Anon, Nar-Anon, not Narcanon, Nar-Anon, and other, you know, and lots of counselling out there as well. So there's lots of support for families.
And these are not the only three people with this.
No.
With this, you know, through the looking glass story and coming out the other side. Back to Haley, and in that phone call, so it's like fishing. You've got the fish.
Yep.
It's nibbling, nibbling, nibbling.
Yeah.
And it's hooked.
You're so right, Faye. It is exactly like that.
Exactly.
Now, first, the fish wasn't interested, but you're a good fisherman. You put the right bait on.
That's right.
Nibble, nibble, nibble inquiry. Bang! Got it.
Exactly.
Now you've reeled it in.
Okay, stage two.
Stage two. How do you fill it? How do you get to the good bits? The good bits back on the plate.
I'll tell you how we do that. So the first bit of fishing is over the phone, and a few words and a few things that cut through and a little connection that happens down the phone line pretty quickly, that's enough to get a person to at least commit to coming into the centre for an appointment face-to-face. That's where the real work's done face-to-face.
Yep.
And once we get to that point, so we know that, you know, Jack and I both know that once we can sit down in front of somebody and talk to them, we have an 80% likelihood of helping them and getting them the help that they need. There's a small percentage that we'll reject, but as far as I'm concerned, Jackie boy, they're ungettable.
Hayley, at this point, do you meet Mick face-to-face at some point thereafter?
Yeah, the first person I saw was Jack when I walked in the doors,
yep,
and it was bizarre because I don't know if you've ever been to a rehab before. Everyone's smiling, and you haven't been around people who are smiling when you've been using for, you know, X amount of years. It was just the weirdest thing. I walked in, Jack, big smile, hey, how are you going? And nearly freaked out a lot. And then, you know, then I see Mick as well, same thing, smile, and, you know, they want to give you a hug and you freak out. But it's warming, and you kind of, I don't know, for me, it just kind of drew me in. I was a little scared, but it drew me in that, you know, that little bit more. But, you know, there was still a bit more fishing to do,
yeah,
for sure.
Okay, we're going to take a break. At the moment, smiling, welcoming, it could be the Church of Scientology. It's not. They don't want something from you.
No.
They want something for you. And we'll find out how that something for you became maybe, yes, doable. We'll find out your reaction to what they were offering and then the great news as to what happened afterwards after the break. What a right time we've had. Great to have Hayley in the studio. She's off the SMS. Well done, Hayley. Brave. Is it brave? Is it smart? Is it brave?
Yeah, it's brave.
It's many things. Is it difficult?
Unbelievably difficult.
So it's tenacious?
Yep.
You need tenacity. You need focus. Self-belief?
No, don't have that. Most likely, most people don't have that, okay, when they come in.
Because these are qualities that you don't have to have when you walk through the door, though.
No.
You could. These are right. That you probably don't have. Or if you might have them, but you've suppressed them, or they've been swallowed by your addiction, and that's the skill of the treatment facility, is to get your best qualities working for you again. And
correct.
The sort of things that you would instinctively have done prior to your addiction.
Yep.
You know, if you were lost in the bush, you'd fight hard, you'd be brave, you'd be tenacious, because you want to live. You don't want to die in the forest, and you'd call on all of those resources, and they are suppressed in addiction.
Yep,
it's almost
agree.
Yeah, it's almost startling to former addicts, isn't it, Hayley, that you didn't call on those qualities before you visited Dayhab, but I guess they found them for you and you had them.
Yeah, turns out I did have them.
Bloody oath. So we go back to Hayley arriving, and Hayley, you're curious, but you said maybe 80%, I don't know what percent, but not all of you is immersed in the notion of becoming the person you are now. There's still a lot of you invested in your friends, in your lifestyle. Mm. It's you. It had become you.
Yeah.
How did the smiling, lumbering Jack and the
lumberjack?
I don't know what Nick would look like with a smile. Sneering, tattooed. The happy. But how did
the happy-go-lucky?
How did these how did they get you to start to think, and when did you start to think, you know what, I want what they're selling?
Well, just first of all, I used to refer to them as the smiling assassins, because that's what they were. But it took a couple of days for it to kind of sink in for me, because the first day you're a bit shaky, and if you're coming off ice like I was in and out of sleep, like Jack will tell you, you know, doing the nods and stuff like that. But it was a couple of days in when I realised that everyone around me wanted to get clean, because I was under the impression that everyone at rehab wanted to meet other people to do drugs with, which is completely incorrect. And everyone around me wanted to get clean, which I thought was bizarre. But yeah, it was probably by the third day where I realised that I liked this idea of getting clean, and I liked that there were these people here that genuinely wanted to help me rather than, you know, steal my money or something silly like that. And the penny just sort of dropped, I guess, and then I actually started, you know, I grabbed onto it with two hands and I've never looked back, I guess.
That penny dropping, do you know when somebody's, when that fish is going to be landed? Is that, and
I know when it is landed.
Yeah, I'm saying, and at that point, there's the work almost begins then, doesn't it?
It does. It does. So in our program, I think you'll back me up on this one, Jack. I see the penny drop for people when they come in and engage in the program. If it's going to drop for them, and for the majority it does, we usually see that within the first 72 hours. Day one, sometimes it happens. Day one, we go, wow, yeah, bang, it's dropped. This guy's going great guns. Some people, it takes 2 days, but certainly by the end of the third day, we're usually looking at somebody that's had a complete and utter, like something's happened. You can just see it in their eyes. Mm. There's just this, the eyes are the window to the soul. I don't want to get too freaky on you, but the eyes are the window to the soul. And when you're helping so many people and you see them walk in, and I've been doing this a long time, so I see the deadness that's in people's eyes when they come in and asking for help and they're in the thick of their addiction. I can see the dishonesty and the death in their eyes. And so you notice it a lot when that changes, when something happens. Like, it's very, very prominent. And it can happen pretty quickly.
Hmm. Off the SMS, just somebody's asking, how long will my detox withdrawal last? A lot of people are very scared of the physical... when their addiction is... narcotic, they're very scared and nervous about the physical withdrawals.
Yep.
But you've pointed out that even the most, and they can be ferocious, absolutely ferocious.
Yep.
But it doesn't, the physical withdrawals, what's the period?
Well, it depends what we're sort of, withdrawing from. But I mean, the most that we're going to kind of look at, other than cannabis, the most we're sort of looking at really is 7 days. 10 days in some cases. But really, we know that after about day 3 to day 4, we're really over the worst.
Mm. So that's doable.
That's doable.
Okay.
It's achievable.
Hayley, the length of time that you were in rehab and that you were working to where you are now can be... How long have you been in recovery? How long have you been clean for?
22 months.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
The period of that is rehab, the period of that is involving talk therapy and all the work that these guys do, it's not important tonight because that varies, doesn't it, for different individuals?
Yep.
And the journey will be different for everybody. When you returned from, or out, when you returned out of left Dayhab, were you scared? Were you, was this, you're out of the nest, you're out of the safety zone.
Yeah. It's funny that you said nest because when I was, my time was up, I actually didn't want to leave and I threw a bit of a tantrum and I was told that I had leaving the nest syndrome because I was petrified because I hadn't lived clean in a very long time. So, the idea of getting work or just, finding new friends to hang out with really scared me. But, once I did have to leave the nest after I was rudely kicked out, I got on with my life pretty quickly. Like, I got a job and from getting a job, I was still going back to dayhab for counselling once a week, and I was doing a bit of volunteer work and I was going to aftercare, so all of that sort of stuff, going to all the meetings. But yeah, the job really helped me because it sort of introduced me back into society with, all the, I hate to say normal people, but all the normal people really.
And this aftercare stuff as well, it's very important because, we use the analogy, I think it was last week, about the diabetes, and it's like the diabetic going to the doctor and the doctor says, okay, well, we can treat this. We're going to take your blood sugars. We're going to, you're going to inject insulin. We're going to change your lifestyle so you can do some exercise. We're going to change your diet. You'll see a nutritionist. We'll change your diet. And if that person gets that management plan, if that person sticks to that management plan, that diabetes disease will be managed, right? And it'll be arrested. Exactly the same scenario with addiction. And if the person doesn't engage in that management plan, then there is a massive likelihood of relapse. But if a person engages in that aftercare plan or that management plan and continues with it, then we can pretty well guarantee they're going to be good as gold.
And me and Mick were actually talking about that today in the office, about some of the guys and girls that we have coming back to aftercare, and someone's chances of staying clean and getting a great life just go through the roof. And for everyone that comes back to aftercare at Dayhab consistently for months to a year, stays clean for a very long time and completely changes their life like Hayley's done.
And Hayley, we could talk about so many things that are more positive about your life now than then, from work to family to your relationships with your mum and new friends or friends that you've reconnected with. But the one thing that I've consistently noticed in having done this program and all the people that I've met through it and friends of mine, and is that you can have dreams and ambitions again for the future. You can see yourself down the track in terms other than tomorrow and just living for feeding your addiction. So what are your dreams? What do you look forward to now that wouldn't have been a notion when you were an addict?
Well, one of my dreams used to be getting my license, because I wasn't able to get that, and I got that fairly recently. But mostly now my dreams include just working in the industry, really, and just giving back what was given to me.
Pretty simple, but pretty sweet.
Yeah, it's again, not living in the moment, not living being a slave to a master, which is an addiction, and whether that's drugs, whether that's alcohol, or whether that's gambling, that living in the moment, the next hit, the next bet, the next, is all consuming.
Finally, just to
some great SMSs, aren't
there? There are some great SMSs, and we had an SMS here that's asked for the family's anonymous phone number. So I'll just give that out. So the two mobile numbers is 0435 758 495. Or 0435 758 095. That's for Families Anonymous. It's for family members and loved ones of addicts that are seeking support and help.
Beautiful. Our friend from NARI, this program will be available on the SEN website. Braden will have that on, as he always does with every edition of The Right Time, sometime this evening. Off the SMS from Mark: you must be proud of your achievements, Hayley. Thanks to the great work Mick, Jack and the rest of the staff at the rehab facility and other places like Dayhab. Great segment, guys. Fantastic idea having Hayley in. Great to hear from a recovered addict, from Jace. And more words of congratulations. It's you're 22 months clean. You're a fantastic, positive person, as is Jack,
yep,
as is Mick, as is Gavin, as you or your loved one, or your teammate, or your mate, or your girlfriend or boyfriend, son, daughter can be as well. It's philosophical change that is absolutely doable when professionals and people who understand and can talk to you in your language about your problem get in contact with you. Can't fight. You're fighting a devil. You know, fighting a big, big, big battle here. Don't try and do it on your own. Thanks, Hayley. Thanks, Jack. Thanks, Mick.
John, you're fine.
You know, Dayhab's number's 1-800-329-422. That might be worth keeping as well.